Welcome to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Joyous conversations about what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about our one reality. You have nothing to fear. You are eternal and you are perfectly loved. Knowing the truth changes everything. Now, here's Roberta.
So you're leaving the funeral. Everybody is sad. What do you say to the little child who looks up at you and says, "Where's Grandma now?" Welcome to Seek Reality. This is Roberta Grimes. Our guest today is a very good friend of mine, Dr. Karen Herrick. She's the director of the Center for Children of Alcoholics Incorporated in Red Bank, New Jersey. She's been a therapist for at least 30 years. I don't know. I guess I've lost count, Karen. Focusing on problems relating to childhood trauma, and she actually has helped me personally. I had an alcoholic father. She's just written a lovely little book called Grandma, What is a Soul? To help parents deal with their children's grief. Welcome, Karen. I'm so glad you're here.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad to be here, too.
Well, we have a lot to cover because I think it's important, above all, that parents understand that there are good answers that are not scary, that are positive and uplifting, and that can help children to process their grief and move on. And that's what we all want, especially with young children. Her little book, Grandma, What is a Soul, is really written, I think, Karen, correct me if I'm wrong, written to be read with a child, even if the child is a little older, 10 years old maybe.
Yes.
It's still, is that right, Karen?
Yes, uh-huh.
It's a beautifully illustrated book, very cute pictures, but it's not meant to be just given to a child and you walk away. It's meant to help you do what we all need to do when there's the death of someone a child loves, which is to help the child process grief. Tell me, how do children view a death, Karen?
Well, of course, they view a death that they're going to lose you, which is how this book started with my 7-year-old grandson, who we're in the car, you know, driving, and he said, "Grandma, I don't like to talk about this very often." Well, we had never talked about it, but "I don't want you to die." And I could hear the fear in his voice, and his voice was shaking. And I knew, wow, this is really a profound moment, you know?
Yeah.
So I said to him, "Well, honey, I don't want to die either. And most people don't die until they get really old. And I'm not really old yet. But when I do die, my soul will come back and look and watch over you." And so then he said, "Grandma, what is a soul?" And so then I started, and that's what the book is about, how I tell about a soul, but also it gives the child's reaction and the questions a child would have.
Yes, that's part of what makes it valuable. Something else that makes it valuable is that it's something that people who are Christian or people who are not Christian or even people who are atheists can use. Because what Karen has done is to take what those of us who study the afterlife evidence have learned about the process of dying and what happens after death and just boil it down in really simple terms. Doesn't refer to any religion, doesn't refer to Jesus, but does refer to the fact that we are all surrounded by love and we are all protected. And that, I think, is really the biggest value of your book, Karen, that it doesn't take us in a direction that a parent might be uncomfortable going based on its family's religious tradition. I think that's very important. Did you have to work at that?
No, in fact, I think it was from all the studying that I've done that it just came out that we could have this nice conversation. And I, of course, wanted to keep it simple so that he would understand. And I did keep it simple, but it was from all my studying of the afterlife and, you know, my spiritual psychology PhD. It finally all came, you know, together in 20 minutes in a car. And I knew when we finished, he was so much happier. And I thought, wow, you know. And what was interesting was then my editor on the Searchlight of ASCSI had sent 2 weeks later a request to all the board of directors, "How would you tell a 7-year-old about the soul?" I couldn't believe the synchronicity of that. So I wrote it up.
That's I understand that they do sometimes put out a call. Let's just explain what ASCSI is.
Okay.
Tell us what you're president of, Karen.
I'm president of the Academy for Consciousness and Spirituality Studies, and you can go online, www.ascsi.org, and we have a website, of course, and we have a free internet newsletter that you can column that you could go into that I write on spirituality matters. So it's a bunch of people. I guess I was a member maybe 7 or 8 years ago where I sent them a paper that I had written on for therapists about this spiritual diagnosis that really nobody still knows about. And they called me up and said, would I come to a conference and give give the talk on this paper, and they were going to publish it. So it was just getting together with a bunch of people, lawyers, PhDs, scientists, people that like to work with their hands and are interested in quantum physics. It's quite a group of people interest, and I just enjoyed it. And so every year I tried to present at their conference, and then I became a member, and you can become a member for $25, which I think is one of the deals on Earth
of the century.
And so you could go online if you want to become a member. You'll get a newsletter every 2 months that comes through the snail mail, and just lots of journal articles and just people that are interested in what does happen to you after you die.
One of the things I'll talk about in a minute is the two conferences that we're putting on this year. I'm also a member, and I'm co-chairing one of the conferences, so we'll come back to talking about that. But first, let's talk about how a little child at the funeral, maybe they're even seeing grandma looking pretty, pretty still, wearing unusual makeup in a box.
Right.
How does a child, especially a young child, process that experience?
Well, they're afraid. And lots of times when children are afraid, they don't say anything to you. If they're used to getting shushed, or, you know, we don't talk about that, which is, I've gotten some comments over the last month of, you know, people that had this happen when they were 6 or 7, that they actually, Papa died, nobody talked about where Papa went. And, in fact, one gentleman said, you know, after a while, after weeks, they went to a crematorium and they picked up this metal box and Papa was inside of it. And
oh
he
goodness.
Just didn't understand. But he said he didn't have the words to ask the questions, or maybe because they treat it so hush-hush, they don't know how to say it to someone that little, that he didn't feel like he could ask and it would be, you know, he would be given an answer. And a lot of people don't know. So that's why in the book there's a section for parents in the back that explains your soul more for adults. Because adults need to know about it so they can explain it to the child. So the first thing you would do with children is to try to answer them.
The fact that children are afraid is important to understand. They're afraid, and they see that you're shaken up and upset, maybe crying,
right?
And they think something horrendous has happened. And the fact that you don't talk about it makes them think this must be something so awful that there are no words you have for them. I mean, you're used to with your children reassuring them about school and about every, you know, how you cross the street. They look to you for guidance. And now, quite unexpectedly, usually it's out of the blue, something has happened in the family that took away someone we love and at the same time has upset everybody and nobody will talk about it. And where is this person who has disappeared? Usually children aren't taken to open casket moments, that which is a good thing. So
they
just know that one day grandma or grandpa wasn't there anymore, could even be a parent, wasn't there anymore, and that nobody will say where they are, and nobody explains anything. This, I think, is part of the trauma. It's not just the loss, but it's the fact that you, who they trust to tell them the truth about things and to comfort them, you have no words for them at all.
Yeah.
And I think that's the tremendous value of a book like Karen's, because it gives you a frame in which you can, in a non-threatening, positive way, tell them what actually we're learning is true about what happens at death. It's all good news, but it's not good news to little children who don't get to hear it.
That's so true. So the basic thing that you want to be able to do with kids is to be able to talk to them on their level, not talk down to them or lecture, because they just turn off. So that's another thing that the book could teach you is how to do that. I think it's a good example of staying with the child and the perception the child has.
I also think that for people who are traditional Christians, which I was for most of my life, it can be hard to tell a child what the religion teaches, especially very fundamentalist versions of it, because it is kind of scary. I mean, there's hell, there's the possibility of a very negative outcome, and speaking as someone who, as a little child, was told that there would be a throne room and I would, for eternity, sit at the foot of a throne with a harp, I didn't even think that sounded very appealing. Poor grandma, that's what she's doing now. So from a child's perspective, adult versions of most religions still are aren't very comforting when it comes to what happens at death.
Yes, but most religions do say everlasting life, and so that's where the book goes. It goes to everlasting life, and what does that mean? And what kind of a life will I have? And what kind of a body will I have? And I explain that, in the book, in his terms. And it's really funny you mention hell, because he asked me about hell in the car, and I didn't put that in the book. But anyway, I told him that I don't believe in hell. I believe in many levels of heaven. And so I kept out the negative levels of heaven at that moment. So it's funny, about 10 days later, he's with me and he says, Grandma, he says, you may be right, Grandma. You could be right. Now, so he's trying to worry about my feelings. But right. Grandma, do you remember when we go to the airport, there's a big sign on the parkway, and it's actually on the turnpike in New Jersey. It's a big white and black sign. Now, here's a little kid sitting in the back seat driving to the airport, and it says, are you going to heaven or are you going to hell? In these big letters, right? And so he's sitting back there scared that maybe he's going to hell, but what is that? Isn't it amazing? I mean, they can get this just anywhere. I said, well, honey, those people believe in hell. And so he said, oh, okay. But, he hasn't asked me about that yet, but I'm ready for that, if he does.
it's important. This is a very important point and a cautionary tale for parents. Our children in this society are exposed to the beliefs of a lot of different people, and some of those beliefs are scary to kids.
Right.
And yet again, as you point out, Karen, you had given him an opening, but if you hadn't given him that earlier opening, he might never have asked the question. And why don't they ask the question? Because the answer might not be good. So they're not going to ask a question if they worry that they're going to learn something they'd rather not know. Children are pretty self-protective. So if you drive past that billboard, if you happen to live in New Jersey, or if you know that your children are being exposed to beliefs that would frighten them, it's important to mention them, especially when a child is maybe 7 or 8. You don't have to do it with a 4 or 5-year-old, but at some point in their childhood, it's important to kind of clean out the mess that our culture will put into people's heads.
And I think another thing that's important, and this goes for adults too, but with kids, is to teach them that we all have differences. And so that somebody else could believe in hell, but you don't have to be scared by it, So differences are important, that we learn that they are there and that we can just say, okay, well, that's what that group of people believe. And, that's why we live in America, because they can believe that.
All kinds of things. I think it's important to say here, for people who may not have heard many of these podcasts, that I have spent my lifetime studying nearly 200 years of abundant and consistent afterlife evidence, and there's a lot of it. It's the most fun hobby you can imagine. But that being the case, I can tell you that there is no evidence, in a lot of people have looked for it as well as I have, there's no evidence of a fiery hell, and there's no evidence either of a judgment by anyone but yourself. So the news from the actual evidence itself is all good. But you don't have to believe that. You can believe whatever you like. It's just important that when your children are exposed to these frightening ideas, it's very important to help them process them in a positive way so they don't go through their lives, their young lives, traumatized, which they can be. I have friends who were raised in very traditional, strict, fundamentalist Christian churches, and even as adults, they're afraid. They're not afraid in a positive way. Well, I'd better shape up because I want to make sure I go to heaven. They're traumatized and afraid in a way which weakens them spiritually and weakens their ability to cope with life. And that's something you don't want to have happen to your child. So it's important to, even if yours is a church that is stricter, that's something you can teach them as they get to be in their teen years, as they get older and can protect themselves a bit better. But a young child needs only to know that God is infinite love and nothing but love, because that's true. The evidence also shows that to be true. And if there's a scary thing they need to learn to be part of their church, they can learn it when they're old enough not to have it traumatize them.
And I also think it's important for parents that are listening to this to know, and if any kids are listening too, that science now is proving with near-death experiences that there is everlasting life. So we have scientific investigators that are proving this. It's not just the age-old books that you can read, which those are wonderful and they have wonderful stories. However, science says that there is an afterlife.
Yes. I think that the problem is that there are a lot of scientists whose careers depend on that not being true. And so for a little while longer, we're sort of left to our own devices in helping and protecting our children and our grandchildren. I'm a grandmother and five. My goodness, it's a wonderful thing. And I know you have eight because you're a show-off. we have a lot of grandchildren among us.
Yes.
And if you have young grandchildren, you want to make sure, with the permission of the parents, of course, that at least they understand that you love them, that you'll watch over them no matter what, and even if you're doing it from there. And that's true, and help them not to be afraid, because it's possible for any of us to sort of graduate unexpectedly, and you want to make sure that your children are comfortable, your grandchildren rather, are comfortable that you love them. Yes, we know we show it every day with everything we do for our grandchildren. I'm with my grandchildren a lot.
Right.
But you're like the water they swim in.
That's right.
They're used to the fact that you love them in a sort of parental way. They need to know that each grandchild needs to know that you have a powerful individual love for that child, as you do. I can talk for everybody listening who's a grandparent. There's no love like the love of a grandparent for a grandchild, but you got to express it because it's something that they don't know automatically.
Yes, that's so true. And of course, we all love being grandparents, and but then there is a responsibility, like you're talking about, to be kind of be the wise one, because the parents are so busy. You know, Duncan asked me, so I'm really glad he did, and the book is dedicated to him because he asked all the right questions. So
yeah, bless his heart.
I know, it's great.
So tell me, Karen, when people make mistakes in rearing their children, they let fear start when it shouldn't start, or sometimes children are the, you know, they have parents who make mistakes who are alcoholics, who have drug issues or have other issues. What are the issues that you find in adults who come to you who have had these problems? What kinds of problems can they cause in adulthood?
Well, what happens is that if a child can't handle something, they repress it. So that's what we call our unconscious. And so they have a lot of unconscious issues, and many times they live in fear, and fear causes a lot of negative thoughts. And so spiritually, we want to help them with that. So many of them have a lot of anxiety issues, OCD issues, just different kinds of fears, and not thinking that they're good enough. So one of the things that therapy helps them with is self-esteem, because so many times the people that come to me from alcoholic or drug addicted families, they're very intelligent, but they don't even know that, because maybe they've been cooking dinner since they were 5 years old, and they know at five they're not so, and they don't think they're doing it right, so they don't get really, you know, attaboys from anybody, number one, but they don't give themselves an attaboy that, hey, I've been cooking dinner since I was five and nobody's starved to death. They just start to feel very inadequate and fearful. And usually the problems occur in different relationships that they're having. So people come to me in transition or thinking about leaving a relationship or how to make it better so they could stay. So that's where a big issue comes from is relationships, because most of them want to be in control because they weren't in control when they were kids. And so you know that how somebody that wants to be in control can kind of mess up a relationship that you're trying to have with them.
Of course. So it's all kinds of different problems. It's
yes.
not just one kind of problem. Well, this is another reason why I used to say when I had young children, it's too bad they make you keep the first batch because I was learning with that batch.
That's
and,
right.
You know, it'd be nice if you could throw out the first batch and then you could have your real kids, which was one reason I've become so involved in my grandchildren's upbringing from their birth, because I keep thinking I know how to do this now. But
That's
the
right.
problem is, you still really don't, because every person is so unique. I mean, my grandchildren are totally different from my children. Each is such an individual being. And, of course, they do have parents who don't necessarily want you to teach them things the parents don't believe. So there are some constraints there. But it is a lovely relationship.
Yes, and I think if you can... like being a therapist, I don't say much to my kids about their kids and how they're raising them. Unless
no,
I think...
Can't.
Unless I think it's, you know, it's really negative what they're doing. And then I will say something. And I don't, so that doesn't happen often. So that when I do say it, they do listen partially. And I think that's the best you could hope for.
Listen partially.
Because I wasn't the best mother either. I didn't know any of this stuff. That's part of the problem. You know, now in high school, I understand some of the high schools around here in Red Bank, New Jersey, the kids can take home a baby. A baby that actually cries, that, you know, has some kind of computer
chip in it. Oh, I've heard of this. Yeah.
And they have to take care of that child, and they have to learn about marriage. And, I mean, I think that's so wonderful. And, you know, one of the girls, I heard from one of my clients, young clients, she couldn't handle it. She took the baby back within 2 days, and she just took an F because the baby was such a pain. And I said, yeah, well, sometimes they are, you know.
But
that's what we're trying to show you, that this is a lifelong decision you're making here with someone.
Yeah, they don't tell you when they give you the little bundle in the hospital that the child never stops being your child. I feel as if I have eight children, and
right.
I think that's a wonderful thing. But what you're saying is that there is help available, even if someone is listening and says, oh, my goodness, I realized that I should have done more for my children when grandma died or whatever. When they go to therapy, there are ways to help them integrate that knowledge even as adults, right?
Oh, absolutely. And anybody listening here who feels guilty about their quality of parenting, just remember that that's a good person. And just try to give yourself a break. You did the best job you knew how to do at the time, and now you're going to learn how to do things better. That's all. I think we waste a lot of time feeling guilty and not good enough.
Well, that's certainly true, because if you're real good in one area, you might be slipping up in another.
Yes.
My experience has been that learning these truths, and not just in my own life, but in the lives of people I know, learning what's true about God, reality, death, and the afterlife does seem to enormously improve one's emotional health. It makes you happy in a deeper way than anything else really makes you happy. And I think gives you a sense of your own worth, because what we learn, of course, from studying the afterlife evidence, that each of us is infinitely precious, much more precious to God than you could imagine being even to yourself. So all that kind of makes you feel good, don't you think?
I do think so. And, you know, another thing that makes people feel really good is the ones that I have that are in chronic grief, they can't seem to get over the loss of a loved one. When I suggest they go to a medium, and, you know, and a lot of them don't believe in mediums, that those are people that talk to the dead. I just say, I think, you know, it's going to help you with this chronic grief you have. You don't know where the person is. You don't know, you know, did you
right.
cause them to have that heart attack? I mean, you know, why are they there? You have a lot of guilt about that. So just go for me. And usually I have help of family members, because I usually get people you know, the sister-in-law sent somebody, and I happen to know that sister-in-law likes mediums. And so, yeah, oh, yeah, my sister-in-law told me I should go, too. Well, really? Well, maybe she'll go with you. And for a guy, it takes me 3 to 4 months to make them go. But when they go, and then they always tell me, well, I'm not going to go again. I didn't ask you to go again. But what did you get from it? Oh, my God. My wife is up there. She's playing cards with her parents. She's having a good time. And she said it was a fault. And she told me about the two boys I have to take care of and which one I should worry about. And he said, and I'm telling you, when they come in, all of this pain is lifted. And they now have hope. And that's what we want to give people in therapy or from mediumship or from any of the studies that we're doing is hope.
Yeah, I think that that's a very important point. I want to say here, though, that there are some mediums who are not very good, and there are some who are terrific.
Yes.
If you think a medium might help you or might help someone you love, one thing you might do if you can't get a good reference from someone like Karen is to go to the Windbridge Institute's website. It's in Tucson, Arizona, Windbridge, those two words put together, and they certify mediums, and there's a list there of reasonably priced mediums, all of whom have been tested by the Windbridge Institute and certified to be good, to be able to bring through actual evidential information from the dead to their living loved ones. This is very hard to do. And so the fact that a lot of people can do it somewhat, but not very well, and yet they still hold themselves out as mediums should be maybe not held against them as much as it might be, because they do have some connection. But I'm very skeptical of the whole area. So when I went to a medium recently, it was to someone who I knew was extremely good. And there are some who are extremely good who still work with the public, but very few, actually. And those who do, most of them are very expensive. We're talking four figures. So if you really are interested in trying to contact a loved one, try the Windbridge Institute and see what you can find there. I should say, too, Karen, while we're at this, that it can be actually better to communicate by telephone and do your reading by telephone. I know that's surprising because we're not in the same room, but your loved one is in a space of non-distance. There's no separation at all between where you are and where your medium is, even if that medium is in Australia and you're in the U.S. So it can actually be better to do a reading by phone. Some mediums have said it's disconcerting to have the person in the room who is the loved one that whose family or whatever, people who've died, they're trying to reach. It can be disconcerting because they're looking at you. And what they want to do is focus on the people who have died who want to come through. When I had my reading, Karen, there were 70 people there, and they were all around a big wooden table at a farm. The closest in ones were around the table, and the rest of them were seated in rows. I said, come on, that's not possible. She said, oh, yeah, it's a big farm. And she talked about the cows and the horses and all of this. Well, she didn't know. I don't think anyone could know. My grandfather had been a dairy farmer. That was his farm where yes. We were. And every cow and every horse that he ever had loved was living there and was there with him. That's how beautiful this whole thing is.
Yes, and they said, there with him on the other side, you mean?
Yes, we're on the other side with him. And,
right.
And they said, this is where we're going to hold your party. So I said, oh, well, I hope it won't be soon. They said, oh, no, it won't be soon. but this is a fun thing to do, to go to a really, really good medium. I think I will be interviewing the medium I went to on a later podcast. I'll save her name until then. But she's inexpensive, and she's terrific. But anyway, that's about mediums, which is I think, I agree, Karen, a very useful way for people, especially adults and young adults and, you know, teenagers too, to process grief. Because
yes.
There's nothing like phoning home to kind of make you feel connected again in a profound way.
It's true. And also that they do have ways of trying to connect with you, the spirit side, and that's called ADCs, after-death communication. So they can send you butterflies or coins or different things that they help you see to know that they are alive. And they also use electricity and magnetism to come in. So if you have lights that go on and off, your television doesn't work, your computer doesn't work, they could be fooling with that electricity. So just know that there's all kinds of ways they're trying to get to you because they love you and they miss you. Just like my little book says, that I'll be watching over him and I'll be helping him in any way that I can, you know, when I'm on the other side.
Maybe this is time for me to mention I have written a book on that topic.
Okay.
This is Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My books are The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, which is a general book about the afterlife and what we now know is true about death and the afterlife. And my second book out this past year is The Fun of Staying in Touch, about exactly what Karen just mentioned, all the different ways that our loved ones give us signs of their having survived, and also the ways in which we can contact them. Some of them are new, cutting edge, and amazing. You can learn more about my books at robertagrimes.com. And I just want to mention again that our guest today is the wonderful Dr. Karen Herrick. Besides being a successful therapist, she's the president of the 40-year-old Academy for Spiritual and Consciousness Studies. And this year, the Academy is putting on two terrific conferences. I recommend them both. The first is Aspects of Consciousness. It'll be held in Durham, North Carolina in June. The second one is Life in the Afterlife, which will be held in Scottsdale, Arizona in September. And that one, actually, I'm co-chair of, and I can't wait. It's going to be the most fun I've ever had. Go to ascsi.org. That's ascsi.org for information about both conferences. So, sorry, just had to put a little plug in there, Karen, for my book
and
for the conferences. So all right, here people listening are just wondering, how much time and effort do they need to put into studying this? How would one go about learning enough about what happens at and after death so that we're prepared? Grandma's sick, Grandpa, you know, is getting to be 90. We know that our young children are going to have this experience. How do we prepare ourselves to deal with the questions?
Well, I think, you know, reading that book to them, if somebody is sick, wouldn't be a bad idea. And then there's a bibliography in the back, and there would also be many bibliographies on the ASCSI website. Most of us who are on the board write books. And they're pretty simple books, I think, to help you understand. Because when you're first, especially if you're in grief, you don't really have the energy to read a very long book that is kind of a little bit boring about what happened in the 1912s. You really want to just read some things right now that is going to help you. So I would say, if you do buy my book, look at the bib and then look up some of those and go online for ASCSI and you know, read some of the books that we have written. I think that's a great idea, because if you sat with a little child and if Grandpa's sick and you read about how Grandpa's going to go to heaven and always be there and watch over him, how peaceful is that going to be? He's not going to feel the loss as much when Grandpa does leave.
I think it's important to understand, too, that the way we've always thought about death in the afterlife has been vague. Up there somewhere. And people, we assume they're sitting on clouds, they're watching over us from the clouds, or well, what? I mean, nobody really knew, you know, even 15 or 20 years ago, virtually nobody knew what, when you put all the information together, what it would show. So it's a very, very recent development that we do have good, solid, accurate information about what happens at and after death. Very recent. And it's a big picture because it involves physics. It involves what consciousness is and how it works. It involves what we're learning about God. Frankly, to me, that's the most amazing part of all this whole study, is to find out that God is real. And you can be an atheist or not, but that's a belief system, just as Christianity is a belief system. And neither of them is totally right, but certainly atheism is barking up the wrong tree. There are simple books, mine is one, and there are others, which just summarize things. The Fun of Dying can be read in an evening. It's a very, very short book with large print, meant for people who are either dying or have just been bereaved, and they just can't focus on much, but they'd like to know what's going on. It has a bibliography of 70 books by category.
Yeah.
So that if there's, and many of them are written by the Academy's board members, so that if you're unsure about something, you can get more information from other people who have really done the work. But I recommend that everyone who has young children and knows they're going to be facing this problem of a close loved one dying, I recommend that everyone prepare yourself, of course, because you're going to lose a loved one too, but especially prepare to be able to answer those questions without squirming and being uncomfortable and saying ask your mom or whatever you might have to do. Because when they ask a question, this is not a question that they see as in another category. They see this as a question equivalent to what happens if you're hit by a car, what happens if I drink this or that I'm not supposed to drink, what happens if I, what happens? I mean, I'm trying to understand this life into which I wasn't too long recently. I was very recently born, and it's not been long, and you know everything, mom or dad or grandma or grandpa. So this is just a non-judgmental, non-belief based, tell me the facts about reality and how things work.
They want to know what's real. I mean, that's the point. And so how does it work? And they ask all kinds of questions about that, and then you might have to be scrambling on Google to get some answers. But that's great, because they do want to know what's real. Kids are very down to earth and very black and white.
But the problem is, though, that if you deflect the question or act uncomfortable about the question, what you're doing is communicating to your child that this is something bad. This is something scary. This is something about which this person that I rely upon, love and trust, who's virtually God to me, I'm only 6 years old, this person is scared of this field. So I must be terrified. And therefore, I, a little child, am being given a trauma that's totally unnecessary. You do not have to do that to a little child. You can arm yourself with the right answers, simple answers in the child's own words, and at the same time, arm yourself with the understanding of what's really going on, because then your child doesn't hear your own fears, your own worries, and your own, problems in the answer. The child is reassured, and then they won't ask the question again because they've got the answer. So I think it's very important to learn yourself what's going on and make it, especially if, as I say, you're about to have this happen in your family, get ready, because it's not that hard to learn. And above all, I can assure you, having spent decades doing this work, all the news is good. It's really the best news you can possibly imagine about what reality is, what God is, and how it all works. So there's no reason not to begin today to learn the truth for yourself.
Right. But, and what you're explaining is the process of having an open mind, because I think a lot of adults do not have an open mind. So just kind of read and see if it makes sense, if it makes you feel good in your gut, because that's what I teach my clients is, well, what do you think? What's the gut feel tell you? Well, it tells me I should do this. Well, then let's do it.
That's important, yes.
An open mind, because there's been so many people. I think we come into this world, I do believe we choose our parents, and we choose the situation that we want. And for many of us who came into alcoholic or dysfunctional families, we really chose a bear of a family to come into. And so what is that family supposed to teach you? It's supposed to teach you, I think, to become independent and to decide what you want to think. And that's fine, right? But also to keep an open mind about what others say. Also, don't be so rigid that you can't take in new information. Because, if we live to be 84 on average or 86, whatever it is now, we're going to come in contact with a lot of people who are really angels sent to you to try to show you what they have learned and how, they believe life to be. And some of this stuff sounds really weird. weird. You know, people come to my office in New Jersey and they say, well, you should really live in California because you really think weird. Yeah, well, there has to be somebody in New Jersey that thinks weird too, you know. If your religion or whatever is working for you, great. If it's not, then you need to have more of an open mind about, well, let me just hear this person anyway. And maybe for 24 hours, think about what would life be like if that were really true.
It's important to learn the truth. And it's important, as you say, Karen, to have an open mind. Don't be credulous. Don't believe everything you hear. Test it yourself. Do the research yourself as much as you need to do it in order to feel comfortable. But the answers really, really are there, and they're so liberating. They make you feel so happy. I think that's the core of what happens when you really do this research. It makes you happy. Two points, though, that I want to make. The first is, and I'm sad to say this, you can't trust Wikipedia or any other online encyclopedia on any of these topics, because Wikipedia has turned itself into a belief system, and that belief system is atheistic materialism. So if you have a belief system, you're not open-minded by definition, and you therefore are really not doing science, and you aren't espousing the truth by definition. So I'm sad to say you've got to ignore Wikipedia. There is an effort being made now to do an encyclopedia just focusing on what we know in these areas. But in the short term, why not go to VictorZammit.com and just subscribe to their weekly newsletter, because there, they give you the truth. Victor and Wendy Zammit, who are Australians, put out a newsletter every Friday that I would not miss. And although it comes to the U.S. on Thursday, there's something going on with the international dateline. But the newsletter that they put out gives you information you really won't get anywhere else. And since it's free, why not have it come every week? I actually read mine all during the week. So the first thing I would say is you can't trust Wikipedia, but there are good sources you can trust. The second thing I would say is that if you start to do this research and something confuses you, email me, rgrimes@robertagrimes.com. I answer emails. I'm happy to help you if you have a question and you just aren't sure about the answer. And I may not know it, but I can direct you to where you can find it. Because the great thing about this new science of the afterlife, and that's really what it is that it's solid and real and true. And like anything that's solid and real and true, we're still learning about it, but everything we're learning fits together so beautifully. That's what's exciting about it. The conference in Scottsdale will give you wonderful speakers who are working in all the different fields of studying the afterlife and really on the cutting edge in those fields. So that's an opportunity, if this area interests you, to learn a great deal more. If you have a broader interest in a lot of different consciousness-related topics, maybe Durham is for you, and that's in June. Either way, ASCSI.org. Karen's the president, I'm on the board, and it's a terrific, terrific organization of open-minded, open-hearted people. You'll love being part of it.
As I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about some of the people from dysfunctional families who may not want to at all ever contact their dead relatives, okay? Because they didn't have a positive experience, right?
Yeah.
So what I want to say to them is just keep an open mind, and just want to learn about heaven, about where you're going to go, and don't let the fact that your relatives are there scare you away. And if you have any questions about that, you can email me at Karen, K-A-R-E-N, at Karen Herrick, HERRICK.com. Because people in dysfunctional families feel a little bit differently about contacting, the past generation.
It's important to remember that, because even though I came from a family with a dysfunctional parent, I seem to have healed that pretty well. But I would just point out that Jamie Turndorf, who's also been one of my guests and will be again, who's a therapist in this field, Dr. Love. Just Google Jamie Turndorf. She also does podcasts, and she is tremendously helpful in having come up with a way for people who have had a dysfunctional family situation to heal those wounds after death and therefore help people to feel whole. She said that some of her clients have said, gee, they can't wait for mom to die so they can get everything straightened out with her after death. She's impossible now. But people, once we've died, we really do see things differently. We've been through a life review. We've come to see how our actions affected other people. And I think at that point, we all, we're looking at things differently, and we're not going to be, your parents are not the people they were before, when they were here, if when they were here, they were damaging. My own example is a strange one. My father was an alcoholic, and I tried to when I was doing my research with mediums, I was trying to meet him, to contact him as well, because my mom was still alive at that time. And over, mediums would describe him, including what he was wearing, and it was him. But they would say, he won't speak. He won't speak. For 20 years after his death, he would not speak. And then one day my daughter, for a different reason, contacted a medium, and the medium said, your grandfather is coming through to you, and he wants you to go to his daughter, to your mother, and to her sister, and apologize that he's so sorry he messed up their childhood. That taught me one thing which is important. If you do have a dysfunctional family situation and someone has died and you feel some resentments, or even if you don't, it's important to forgive your parents. Just say out loud, I forgive you, Mom, I forgive you, Dad. You know, I'll see you soon. We're all going to be together again. I forgive you. Release them from whatever guilt they might feel, because when you go through a life review and you get to see how your actions have made other people feel, it can be a horrible experience if indeed you have had some issue like addiction or some problem, and you want to release people from that feeling of guilt. Just forgive them. It's easy, actually, I found, but I wish I had done it before I knew he was in trouble. I just had no idea.
Well, also, and you can release them, but they still have to do their work on the other side.
Oh, sure, they do.
And that's
sure
why a lot of people, when they go to a medium, sometimes they cannot contact who they want to contact, because there's no guarantee that if you want to go talk to Aunt Mary that she's going to be there wanting to talk to you, because she's doing her work, whatever that is over there. And the way I understand it is that there are angels and spiritual guides who help them over there to see in a very loving way what they did. And they may not want to take that in for 20 years, our time, but there's no time over there. So
there's
probably not a lot of urgency either, because that's what time does to us, is speed us up a bit. But they're working over there. Yes, your forgiveness can help them, absolutely. But they still have their own work to do. And just know that's part of the process that the angels and guides over there do. They want to help them. And they're assigned all kinds of people, these angels and guides, to help.
Karen, I hate to say this, but we've come to the end of our time together today. I want to make sure people know how to get your wonderful little book and how to reach you. So where is it available?
The book is available on Amazon, and it's in Create Space, which is the kids section of Amazon. And also, it will be on Kindle in probably about 2 to 3 weeks. And if people want to reach me, they can always email me at Karen, K-A-R-E-N, at Karen Herrick, HERRICK.com, with any questions, you know, that they might have before or after, you know, they read the book.
So you're happy to hear from people with questions. That's wonderful, because I'm sure everybody does have questions. It's just great. I know a lot of people are reluctant to hear from people they might not see again, so it's lovely for you to be willing to interact with people, answer their questions. Thank you for that.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I mean, I think that's what we're all here for, to help each other, you know. And I love learning, and many times when they ask me a question, I learn something, too.
Oh, yeah, that's a neat point. So where are you located? You're in New Jersey, and what's
your
address?
I'm in Red Bank, New Jersey, at 205 Broad Street. It's a nice little town about an hour and 15 minutes south of New York City, at the beginning of the Jersey Shore, which is how we are known, and 109 off the Parkway.
That's easy. Okay. And will you give your phone number, too, so people will know how to, if they want to
sure.
call, maybe?
Oh, sure. It's 732-530-8513.
That's great. Thank you so much, Karen. Now, I've got to say, this has been Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. You are a powerful, eternal being. You never began and you never will end. And when you really understand what that means, it's going to change everything in your life for the better. If you'd like to learn more of the amazing things we're learning about our eternal reality, past episodes of Seek Reality are available on iTunes. Just go there and seek on Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. My own nonfiction books are The Fun of Dying, Find Out What Really Happens Next, and The Fun of Staying in Touch, which details a lot of the ways that our loved ones are trying to reach us, give us signs of their survival. Karen mentioned some of them earlier, and this is something I thought everybody knew, but it turns out very few people know what to look for. So The Fun of Staying in Touch will help you to know that after someone has recently died. And it also talks about some of the amazing ways we're learning to contact the dead. It goes way beyond mediums at this point. It's very exciting. You'll find details about all my books and my blog at robertagrimes.com. Now, our guest next week will be Garnet Schulhauser. Garnet, I just love this man. He's mild, he's lovely, he's sort of a businessman, kind of dry. And one day, he met a homeless fellow on the street who turned out to be Garnet's spirit guide. What are the odds? And what he learned from this a really least possible man that would turn out to be a great spirit, what he's learned is really powerful. A few years back, he published Dancing on a Stamp, and I love that book. I had him on an earlier version of Seek Reality as a guest. Now he's just out with Dancing Forever in Spirit. You're going to enjoy meeting Garnet as much as you'll love hearing what he has to say. Don't miss this. Our guest today has been my dear friend, Dr. Karen Herrick. Her beautiful little book, Grandma, What is a Soul?, will help you help your children deal with death. It's the kind of thing which you have handy at any time that this kind of thing comes up in a family. It's always tragic, but we always have to remember the littlest ones. We cannot protect our children from the pain of loss, that's true, but we can empower them with a set of truths that are beyond belief wonderful. Now for just a little break here, I'd like to talk about something which you may not immediately understand is related to what we talk about on Seek Reality every week, but it is central to it. One of the things we discover is that the old style of medicine, the physical style of medicine, doesn't work very well for many people, and I think that's especially true of women. So I've asked Carla Sebesky to just join us briefly. Her business is Natural Healing for Women, and they're located in Manhattan, but she helps people all over the country. And Carla is going to talk to us a little bit about the fact that reality is entirely consciousness-based. What does that mean for our health? Welcome, Carla. I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you, Roberta. I'm happy to be here.
Tell us just quickly what your contact information is, because people listening may be wondering how they can get in touch with you.
Yes, great. So my contact information, the way to get in touch with me is through my website, which is www.naturalhealingforwomen.com. And I do work with women all over the world.
All over the world, wow. And
yeah.
Your phone number?
My phone number is 413-251-1410.
Carla and I have talked at some length about the people she's helped. I think that you don't really understand how important this is unless you hear a little bit of her story. So, Carla, can you tell us just a quick story about the kind of person who might really want to call you?
Well, I was working with a young woman recently who was trying to get pregnant, and she had already had one child, but she was having problems conceiving the second child. And she had gone through all of the conventional routes with a fertility specialist, and after having several in vitro fertilizations and other procedures, they told her there that they couldn't help her, that she would have to go look into adoption or donor egg situation, yeah. And then she, so essentially she was tossed out of there, and then she went to a naturopath, and the naturopath was following her blood results and looking at the numbers of her hormones and gave her supplements and herbs and said, well, if these numbers don't change, I don't know how I'll help you. So after 6 months of working with the naturopath, those numbers didn't change, and the naturopath said, I'm sorry, I cannot help you. So by the time she came to me, this woman was very hopeless. But I knew right away that that we can't just follow numbers. That's not the whole story. And when things aren't, this was a young woman, so I knew that she still had fertility, and that we had to look at some of the emotional and or energetic underpinnings that was holding that pattern in place, the pattern of her not being able to conceive. So I worked looking at both physical issues. She was a vegetarian, and I helped her to look at her diet and make some changes. But then we also looked at some of the energetic and emotional things. So, for instance, she had had a very difficult labor and delivery where she felt a great sense of violation and disempowerment during that. So we looked at those issues, and we worked with them with flower essences to move those issues out of her system. And also she had a beloved grandmother who died right when she was about to give birth, and so she wasn't able to go and be with her grandmother, which she felt a lot of guilt and still had grief around. So we looked at those and were able to move those things out of the system with flower essences. And 6 months later, she conceived twins, and she just had her baby girl.
Twins. That's a great story.
Naturally.
People who are saying, woo, flower essences, need to wait a month or two, and we're going to talk with Carla in more detail. This is all part of the truth that's being kept from us, in fact, by the modern focus on physicality. Did they name a girl after you?
You know, I haven't heard that yet. she just wrote me and told me she just had the babies, and she was very excited,
so
but
happy.
I haven't heard about names yet.
I'm so happy for her. I'm sorry, we don't have any more time with Carla, but again, Carla, how do people reach you?
You can reach me through my website at naturalhealingforwomen.com, or you can Google my name, Carla Savetsky, or my phone number is 413-251-1410.
Thank you so much, Carla. And this, as I say, we're going to have Carla on for a whole session, a whole podcast, to talk a lot more about the part that energy plays in all of our health, male and female. Thank you so much, Carla. Now we're going back to our regularly scheduled program.
Please enjoy and make the most of this coming week in Hour One Reality, knowing that you are a powerful, eternal being, and you are infinitely loved.
You've been listening to Seek Reality with Roberta Grimes. Roberta blogs and answers questions at robertagrimes.com. Join us every week as we explore what the afterlife evidence and modern science combine to tell us is true about the one reality we all share. Knowing the truth changes everything.